Hi dear movie breakers, here we are again, still at Karlovy Vary Film Festival, and I'm talking to Paul Andrew Williams. Hi,
Hello.
It's about your new movie, Dragonfly, which starts quite harmless, one might say, as a story of social connection between an elderly woman portrayed by Blanda Blethyn and Andrea Riseborough's younger next-door neighbor. But this story takes a very dark turn. How did you develop that story?
It was COVID time, and I was like, how can we make a film that would abide by certain rules? So I tried to think about writing something that was contained. I like both the characters are people who I sort of know, and I grew up in that kind of environment. So, you know, people I'm aware of. And I just literally started writing this relationship and trying to imagine what it would be like. And I started on the first page, and without really knowing where the end would be, I just carried on writing to sort of see how their relationship would develop, and then what would happen if it was sort of the preconceptions were misread.
It's very interesting that you said you grew up in that environment, because it's kind of a changing environment. It's this kind of neighborhood that used to be middle class, but then it has obviously transformed to more like social housing, which leads to Andrea Riseborough's figure, which is lower working class or even underclass, to move beside Blanda Blethyn's elderly woman who used to be middle class and now she's retired and she still has her son occasionally showing over, but basically she lives by herself. So did you mean you grow up in a middle-class neighborhood or in a mixed neighborhood?
I grew up in a working-class environment. My nan, my mum's mum, also in a council house. So a lot of the furniture and stuff was how I remember her property. So it was, weirdly, I never really thought about it, actually, in terms of, you know, what was once affluent and desirable, and how now that can turn into something less desirable. And obviously that's a lot. You can say that with public housing when something's first built, you know, it looks amazing and it's fresh and it's new and it's people want to live there. And then obviously after a long period of time, those people move out. And then there's a different class of people who are sort of supported by the government who then get to go to houses like that. So that was, yeah, but I recognize that bungalow, everything about it, both houses.
And you also mentioned you kind of know those characters. They certainly will feel very familiar to many people, especially Andrea Riseborough's figure. How did you develop those two female characters? They're also two very strong, interesting women.
Well, Elsie was, you know, is based on my nan, and there's some elements of my mum, and, you know, just old people who I sort of knew in general growing up. And the same for Colleen, which Andrea plays. Coming from an environment, you always meet people like that who are sort of forgotten by everyone and sort of left on their own. And I guess it's just trying to imagine how a person like that maintains life with very little going forward. Do you know what I mean? Very little sort of. So I know a lot of people.
The story starts on a rather positive and light note. The two women become friends. The younger one, by Andrea Riseborough's, Colleen is her name, starts to take care of the elderly woman. They also meet regularly and have quite a nice interaction on the surface. But this relationship could also be seen as, and I would like to know if that's intentional or if that's more something that's up to interpretation, as something that's deeply toxic. Like, I couldn't help but see this relationship as fraught from the beginning with the class difference between the two. Is that intentional?
I think that basically, not really, because, you know, our preconceptions of both characters, I would imagine, prove wrong. I think that's one of the things about the film. But I think, for example, because of the nature of who they are, and certainly the nature of Colleen, there's already a mistrust of that kind of person in society.
Exactly.
And in a way, that's totally unfounded. And all the preconceptions we have of her, actually none of them are true. She's actually just a very kind and giving person in her own right. So it was always my intention I guess sort of show just a normal thing. And then, yeah, you can make up your own mind. Now, naturally, most people go to the side of like, she's going to rip, you know, she's going to do something bad. And in a way, she doesn't. Not really, not until, I don't want to give anything away, but I think.
But not too very late.
Not too very late. But I think their relationship, you know, obviously you're a bit tense because you're like, why would this woman want to be helping this woman and so on and so on? But I'm like, maybe she just need, they both just need a friend. Both just need someone to be there.
When I mentioned a toxic relationship, you instantly talked about Colleen. And of course, Colleen is the one that the audience will see as the one that's toxic. But the one that I saw as toxic from the beginning was Elsie. Because there's this thing that she does what every middle-class person would do. She takes the service of the underclass for granted. And while she's not very insistent when Colleen asks, hey, can I help you? Can I do all the stuff in the household for you? She's like very quickly to say, okay, yes, you can. When she then offers money to Colleen, and Colleen says first out of politeness, no, she doesn't insist. So this is typically middle class that you just take the service for granted. Is that an intentional
thing? No, it's not intentional at all. That's what's great about making stuff, making films, is that basically the interpretation is taken by the audience, and that's what's really good about it. I never, ever thought of that at all. You know, because the thing is, I don't look at Elsie as middle class at all. I look at her as working class because... you know, middle class would not be in that kind of house and would more than likely have more resources to for care. Whereas the working class, or not underclass, are probably much more left to their own devices and left to the care of the state, which I think she is. I'm not saying that you're wrong in any way at all, because I think it's really open to interpretation.
Most people in the audience were really, really shocked by the dark turns that the story takes. Was that intentional to kind of put the audience in a certain feeling of comfort and security, and then show just draw away the floor underneath them?
I mean, the thing is the end is tough. Now, I personally don't think that the end, don't look at the end as a horror or, you know, gratuitous. I look at it as like a tragic event, a tragedy, you know, basically what is a love story almost between two characters who need each other and gives is broken by outside interference. Desperation causes the end scene. But I certainly didn't mean it to be something that spun everyone out with like a complete U-turn or anything like that. I just thought, if this was the progression, what would this character do in this massive state of shock and sadness?
Absolutely. To me, it made total sense. Like, I really thought like, oh, that's so surprising, because you have seen so many films that are conventional. To expect the directors to just repeat the same concepts of artificial entertainment. And I think that was the reason why the audience was so surprised. Not because it's not realistic or psychologically plausible, but because they are used to see these conventions.
Yeah. Well, basically, the thing is, you know, people have already, you know, like people in America, distributors and so on are like, why you kill a dog? Give me no spoilers. They say they worry about the ending in terms of like, could the ending is, you know, if it was more upbeat, if there was, and I'm like, actually, their life necessarily isn't going to be that.
We know that there is a dog in the story, and actually a dog is almost like the third character. I'm sitting here not only with the director, but also with the actor, are the third character, but there's also the dog, and the dog almost plays a larger role in the connection of the women than the son does.
Yeah, I think that the dog is third billing. I'm fourth billing behind the dog, but she's a lovely creature, the dog, and is very much part of the story. To what you're saying about class and the structure, and I know people like that from my extended family, and it feels that they are, it's more about their connection and their differences in personality perhaps and place and money to some extent, obviously. But it is, I mean, Andrew's character is, many people like that are left behind in Britain, and they're left to fend for themselves with the state. And the idea in the last few years, certainly in the government that we've had the last few years, has been about, you know, almost charities should be left to look after these people. And they won't. Mental health is a particularly uninteresting and unprofitable business, and it's been rather brutal the way that we've left people behind. What's great about the film, in many ways, is that, you know, it is talking about real people that are left behind, and is interesting. And I think audiences enjoy seeing people like that because they often forget about them.
So how did you decide to bring this dog, this animal in the story? Was it there from the beginning, or was it that you thought you need a kind of momentum, something that brings those turns about?
Basically, if you've got no one like Andrew's character, the idea of having something that would love her unconditionally, be there for her, and someone that she could also love unconditionally, that's really appealing to me. But also, a dog is a dog. It's not, I don't necessarily think a specific dog is more evil than another one. The preconception of that kind of dog, not unlike what Jason's character believes, is really, really negative.
I was always thinking the same thing, that the son thinks about the dog, he thinks about the dog's owner, that this is a person who might not have done anything bad yet, but since she's lower class, she definitely was under the care of the system. He thinks, just like he thinks that the dog is a dangerous breed and will attack eventually, he believes maybe that Colleen will do something bad eventually, even though she might have been only kind so far.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's worth saying that the dog, the character's beautifully balanced, if I can say, because you can see obviously there's danger represented by possibly her attitude occasionally, but actually by this presence of the dog that you worry about. It's a large, almost as big as her. But then you see that with her affection towards the dog, she's completely capable of love in any context, incapable of love with another human being. And you desperately hope that she finds that with this woman who she lives next door. So it's beautifully balanced, and you don't know which way it's going to go all the way through. And yes, my character is, he will see the negative side immediately. And in a way, he's removed the dog because it doesn't count and it's dangerous. And what he's left with is someone who's not capable, as he sees it, of being a kind and loving person.
Let's also talk a bit about the setting and the music. We talked about how this film has a very different feeling in the beginning, but there are musical cues that already create like an eerie, threatening air, even at points when the story is still quite content. So how did you develop the music? How much influence did you have on the compositions?
Well, the music by Rafferty, who is very, very clever. The idea was to have a music that could sometimes be, I don't know, would reflect hope, maybe what the audience might feel at a certain time, possibly to extenuate that. But I think for me, the music is more just to sort of say, what is wrong? There's something going on. There's something wrong with the audience, something wrong with the country, something wrong with what's going on in the scene. So just to add a discomfort, if you like, at times that we are all putting onto the film and we're all receiving from the film.
You sort of got a hint in the music of possibly where we may end up. There's a sort of ominous tone to it, isn't it? You think something going to happen. That's what I
like. Yeah. But also it's like, do we let, you know, the music is there to, I don't know, just to say, look, you know, nothing is safe in this world.
Which would also mirror the social stance of the characters. Would you say that it's also a reflection of the social instability?
I think it's a reflection of the instability of it all.
The setting that is so very realistic are those real houses, and it's nothing's built, like, no. Especially those mirror reversed rooms.
That was always the intention. We just kept trying to find houses that were next door to each other in that way. So from the very early days of in the script, and it would say where the doors were and everything like that, it was always very much that they are next door and they are the same, and bungalows. And, you know, we were very, very fortunate to get those two properties.
And it's also they're in the shadow of that huge sort of factory, aren't they, at the end of the road, which again is a weird sort of ominous presence, I think, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, the whole town where we were filming is economically challenged, I think, and a real reflection on parts of the country which are sort of forgotten and almost challenged to have, you know, a lot of ambition and a lot of will to change it and upscale it and do fresh things. And I think, you know, that's a lot of parts of the country.
Yeah, I think it's strongly reflected also in the lighting and the color setting. Like, everything seems cold and grey, and it's not a place where you feel very cheerful. And also if you see the kind of sets and streets. So did you shoot those few scenes that are not within the houses, within the compound, also on a real location? Yeah. Is it the same place?
We couldn't have afforded to build anything. It was quite low budget. So everything was real. All the people in it, in the streets, are real. Because we just couldn't really.
So I read a couple of reviews and a lot said either genre film or genre-defying film. How do you think about genre cinema, and did you ever perceive your work as such?
I honestly try not to think of genre because it's too defining. Do a project and you write a project because you care about the characters and their journey. There are elements of tenderness, and tenderness isn't a genre. For me, it's difficult because I don't particularly like phrasing it in a genre. So genre defying is possibly the best of those two, because then it's not putting it in any kind of hole. I think that's a tragic love story.
At one point, I just want to mention, like, we have this immense jump scare. So would you just like to say a little bit, like, was it always there?
So there is a jump scare. And you know what? If I'm absolutely, absolutely honest, I didn't know it was going to have that reaction. And only after seeing it being made, seeing it with people, do I realize why that reaction is so strong. Because the perception of what the audience thinks as to what's happening and where people are is completely askewed.
Sounds like when you're writing, don't you? I mean, thinking about your writing is that, and the way you've described you write, that there isn't this overall structure at the very beginning necessarily. There's lots of ideas. And then those ideas and the story, as the story goes, something comes into your mind.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
And then that's the thing that, and because this thing that comes into your mind is quite extreme, that, and coupled with the way you shot it, you suddenly feel as though you're in a different genre. But I think what audiences do feel, that they do feel they're in the same world, which is really important. You don't suddenly, you're in some other world. You feel as though you're in the same world that has gone to an extreme. And I think people in life get that, don't they? Suddenly their lives are seeming quite normal and something cataclysmic happens that is very difficult to deal with.
Now that you have made this very strong film, have you any next project or any idea where you want to go next?
I'm writing something at the minute, which probably has a little more hope, but I'm still a bit fucked up probably, but real as can be, but with a little bit of hope.
To a certain degree. So I'm totally excited to see that
one.
Bless
you.
Great interview. Thank you so much. Dragonfly, so far the best film I have seen at Carlo Vivari. If it gets a release in Germany, which then you're certainly going to read about it at Movie Break. Thank you.